And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Born during the despair of the Great Depression, tempered by the fires of the Second World War, on a parallel Earth very much like our own, yet slightly different, they're banded together the greatest forces for freedom ever assembled. Over the many ensuing years, new and younger members would join the veteran champions of the Golden Age, continuing their fight for truth, justice, and the American way. Becoming so much more than just heroes, they became legends. Back to the Bins proudly presents Legends of the Justice Society of America.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Legends of the Justice Society of America. I'm Paul Spataro, and those other two enthusiastic fellows are there are Dave Pascarella and Scott. How the heck did I get so much energy, Gardner?
Okay, so we're continuing our look at the return, the resurrection, as it were, of the Justice Society of America and the related team members. This time around, we have the return of another member of the Justice Society, one that hasn't been seen in decades at this point. So we have two books to look at this time. First one up is Showcase, number 60. Cover dated January, February 1966, was actually on sale November 25th, 1965, for a whopping 12 cents. Cover on this by Murphy Anderson. And to describe it for you, you've got the giant image of the Spectre, and he is looming large. It's kind of a split diorama that he's in. He's kind of stepping out of one diorama and into another. So on the left-hand side of the page, you have him being, he's standing over a city and being attacked by fighter jets, while he is stepping into the other diorama on the right-hand side of the page, where it looks like he's stepping onto a moon or some alien world surface, and he's being attacked by yellow Satan, essentially. So up at the top, where the logo is, it says Showcase, and Showcase is in very small print up there. It says Showcase presents, this is the most exciting comic book event of the past 20 years, the triumphant return of the Spectre. And the Spectre is what's large and in charge on this. It'd be very easy to mistake the title of this book as being the Spectre, since Showcase is so small up there in the top. It says, a combat of colossal chills between the ghostly guardian and a dark demon in a full-length spectacular, The War That Shook the Universe. And that is actually the name of our title. Actually, they dropped the. It's actually War That Shook the Universe is the title of the book. Story is, once again, by Gardner Fox. Art by Murphy Anderson. And I'm assuming he did the solo art chores on this because he is the only one listed. All right. So to kick this off, I'm basically just going to read you the first page of this one here. So it opens to a splash page of the Spectre and the guy that's going to be his chief nemesis for this particular issue. And they're standing in space. And they're each holding the tail of a comet and swinging it at each other like baseball bats, essentially. It's kind of a weird image.
And, I'm going to just interrupt because I had to, had I done the synopsis for this, I had my description for that, and I just need to use it, that they're having a cosmic pillow fight.
Yes. That is actually what it looks like. Yes, that's a much better descriptor. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I just
perfect.
Frankly, it looks more like something else other than pillows. You go with pillows.
And my head's between two pillows. Why?
Those aren't pillows. It says, for more than a score of years, the world has lost sight of the Spectre, who once was wont to roam the earth on his mission to destroy crime and uphold justice. What happened to the disembodied detective? Why has he never been heard from in all that time? only the dark demon Asmodeus knew, and he kept his secret until the moment he chose to come to grips with the specter in a war that shook the universe. At Treasure Castle, where the recently deceased Ebenezer Alcott amassed and hid a fortune, three individuals search for the missing millions. They are Millicent Alcott, legal and sole heir to the fortune, Stefan Miklos, Miklos, a psychic investigator, and Jim Corrigan, police detective assigned to the case. When Miklos's powers prove ineffective, Millicent proposes a seance. This gets Corrigan to reminiscing and yearning for the days 20 years ago when he could separate his physical and astral bodies to summon the Spectre. He thinks how solving this case would be a cinch for that grim guardian of justice. He recalls how the Spectre used to stride across the world, a powerful phantom against whom the forces of evil could not survive. He was on a mission of morals to balance the scales against the criminals who prey upon the weak and helpless. Alas, a seance is held, and when the unidentified medium summons the discarnate spirits seeking their help to find the lost money, Corrigan experiences a sensation he hasn't felt in two decades. The eerie form of the Spectre, freed from the spell that held him immobile within Corrigan's physical body, emerges. And just in time, as it turns out, as gangsters fed up with Corrigan pull a drive-by bombing. The Spectre wraps the device in his cape, orders time to stand still about him, and grows to ginormous size to allow it to detonate harmlessly in the high atmosphere. There he wonders about both the forces that kept him prisoner for so long and what happened to release him. Meanwhile, Miklos gets a tingle in his psychic sense and it's off to a warehouse in search of the fortune. But instead of the dough, Corrigan finds a setup by the mob to rub him out once and for all. Elsewhere, while this is going on, the Spectre is zipping around using his astral vision, whatever the hell that is, to suss out the location of the bad guys who threw the bomb. He conveniently tails them to the aforementioned warehouse where he is just in time to intercept and swallow the hail of bullets intended for Corrigan. Together, the two halves of Jim Corrigan wrap up the crooks, find the cash, and all's well that ends well. Except that this is only page 11 of 24. That night in Corrigan's apartment, the Spectre again emerges from Corrigan's body and the two confer. Corrigan wants to know where the hell the spook has been for 20 friggin' years, and the Spectre doesn't know, other than that he was trapped inside Corrigan all that time by some force he doesn't understand, but is now his mission to find out. So off he streaks to find his answers, and Corrigan wishes him well. The spirit sleuth travels the world, visiting many eerie, ancient, mysterious, and powerful places, from the Soul House in Ecuador to Salem, Massachusetts, to Egypt, to the Temple of Apollo, to Stonehenge, hey, I've been there, and so on, all proving fruitless. While this is going on, Corrigan tries to track down the rest of the criminal gang from earlier in the issue, but he sucks at stealth, so the Spectre, sensing the peril to his physical self, again, returns to bail him out once more. Weakened by all this astral assertion, Spectre returns to Corrigan's body for a recharge, but not before telling him to check out a dude named Paul Nevers in Mountain City. Jim does this and counters the crook, Nevers, who is pulling off spectacular crimes via an astral assist from a being with fantastic powers similar to the Spectre. Corrigan corners Nevers in an alley, holding him at gunpoint. Suddenly, the Spectre emerges from Corrigan as a demonic-looking being emerges from Nevers. The demonic being, named Asmodeus, left his native astral plane and came to Earth 20 years ago. It was his intention to roam the Earth, just as the Spectre does, but bent on doing evil instead of good. However, upon entering a human body, he found himself trapped, just as the Spectre had been, for 20 years. He realized two astral beings such as he and the Spectre could not exist on Earth without canceling each other out. According to Asmodeus, it wasn't the seance that freed the Spectre, it was the death of his human host at coincidentally the same time as the seance that freed the both of them. Okay, whatever. Here's where things get really confusing, though. Asmodeus then says he traveled to a temple in a land of evil to seek help to roam the earth at will. He was given a silver bullet imbued with ultra evil powers. When this bullet slays his host body, it will free him and simultaneously imprison the specter inside Corrigan for all time. What? Didn't he just say that his human host died and that's what freed him and the specter? So what, like, Nevers is his second host, I guess? Why the hell would he even take another host then? Was that something that he had to do? Now, I got to be perfectly honest with you, dear listener. This is where I kind of mentally checked out of this story. Asmodeus challenges the Spectre to an astral tussle, and the visuals are very nice, but at the end of the day, it's your standard run-of-the-mill, I summon this and I call upon that magical bullshit battle that I've never really had much interest or tolerance for in the first place. Suffice it to say that the Spectre gains the upper hand, thanks mostly to Corrigan beating the stuffing out of Nevers in the so-called real world, and imprisons the inert, powerless Asmodeus for all eternity at the corner of Timeless and Limbo. The end. I just have a few notes on this one, honestly. I suspected that this story was in trouble from the moment the writer screwed up and said Corrigan was working for Myra Alcott on page 1, panel 2, just after introducing her as Millicent Alcott earlier in that very same panel. As soon as I caught that, I was like, uh-oh, we're in for something's wrong here. And I wasn't far off. I didn't hate it. I kind of like the Jim Corrigan stuff. I love the art. But it just, I don't know, it so quickly devolves into just that. And we've talked about this a million times, so I'm sorry. I don't want to beat a dead horse. I don't want to keep just bringing up the same points. But it's the same problem I always have with magical or supernatural characters. If their power set is not clearly defined and adhered to, then I'm just bored. And I was kind of just bored with this. It's like, how powerful is this guy? You know, the Spectre, I mean. He just seems to be able to do anything. But then later in the story, he's whining about how Asmodeus is so much more powerful and he doesn't know that if he's going to be able to defeat him. And I'm like, you can grow to like ginormous size. You're like this god of the astral. What are you talking about? So it was confusing and it was weird, and the whole astral plane thing was so bizarre to me, because there's a point where they go to, or they're in like the astral plane, but it looks like they're just in space, and it says astral earth and spirit moon plummet through space toward one another. And at one point they actually collide and explode. And I'm thinking, what are these supposed to be, like spirit versions of the earth and the moon? So I know that they're on the astral plane, but if that's true, that wouldn't that have some sort of effect on the real earth and the real, I was just so lost and confused by
this. Is that the planetarium? It's okay. Don't worry about it.
I just didn't, like I said, great visuals, but what was the point of that, you know? So it was weird. It was off-putting. I really wish I want to like this character. So I wish I had enjoyed it more, but it was, I gotta be honest. It was kind of a slog. So what did you guys think?
Oh, it was a slog.
Yeah. Yeah, I would remove kind of from the description. I have some questions that don't start with WTF.
Okay.
And my first one is, I'm a little confused by the nature of the Spectre. My understanding of the character, which may be wrong, is that Jim Corrigan was gunned down and his spirit was imbued with the power of the Spectre, and therefore it appeared he was still alive, even though he wasn't, but he was in fact the Spectre. Yes. Now, the way this is being presented to me, it's as if he and the Spectre are two separate beings. And mm-hmm. that confuses me right off the bat. Any explanation that you guys have that as to why I was wrong with my original thought or why that has changed if I wasn't wrong?
Because the person who wrote this didn't read the original stories and just had a vague idea of what the Spectre's powers were. Because you hit the nail on the head. That's how he's introduced.
Right.
And isn't he working for God? Wasn't he the wrath of God?
Yes, exactly. At least that's my understanding again.
Yeah, I don't know if that comes before or after this. But yeah, at one point he was considered like, yeah, the spirit of vengeance or something like
that. Because I think that was even in the Golden Age.
I've read the original,
at least, again, my understanding.
The original More Fun comics, when he dies, he kind of, I believe, he goes up to, you know, heaven or whatever, and he's given a choice at some point that he can pass on or stay on Earth, and he chooses to stay, but he can't have a normal life was the whole thing.
Right, right.
Because he's dead.
See, all of that sounds fascinating to me, and that's, you know, it lends into, you know, I want to like this character, you know, I really do, but my problem is that I can't help but feel that he is the actual personification of all the complaints that I've ever heard about Superman being overpowered and kind of boring, because that's what this boiled down to. He's way overpowered and he's kind of dull.
That's but the I same like thought it. I had as I was reading this was, and people complain that Superman is too powerful.
Right.
He grows to the size that, you know, that the Earth is small to him.
Right.
You know, I mean,
wait till the next issue.
Oh, yeah, I know. I read it, but I kind of like made my way through it. I can't even say I read it because, again, and you know what? I want to apologize to the listeners who feel like we should be liking every book that we cover, because clearly we don't like this one. And again, I think, Scott, you're on the money that the visuals are surprisingly good.
Yeah,
I didn't expect Murphy Anderson to really do justice to what this to the cosmic feel. You know, I keep comparing this in my mind, and the characters are in no way similar as far as power set, but I keep comparing it in my mind to Doctor Strange books.
Yes.
And in Doctor Strange, you know, we had Steve Ditko, who created beautiful cosmic worlds. We had Gene Colan doing some of it. We had Frank Bruna doing it. You know, there was so many things in there that really just tantalized the your imagination, that it's just, you know, I didn't expect him to do it justice, and he is doing it justice in an earlier 60s kind of way. Although actually by this time Doctor Strange was out with Ditko doing his cosmic scenes, it feels a little bit more grounded than Ditko. Let me just put it that way, but it's still, the images are really good, and they're going back and forth between the real world and the astral world. And I think he did a great job of creating the cosmic look. And there's also a couple of panels in here where, you know, just the evil face on, you know, Asmandus or whatever his name is, you know, just really stand out to me. So the artwork is excellent, but the story is just like, what the hell is going on here? You know, I just, it never made sense to me. Even the things that they're saying, oh, we're stuck for 20 years because of this, because of that. I just think there's so much of a better story out there that they could have mined and didn't.
Right.
You know, and better explanation for why he disappeared for 20 years. I feel like a broken record when I say it's just a missed opportunity, but there's so many books that we cover that feels like the case. Like if they just put a little bit more effort into creating a reality that feels like it makes sense, you know, that this story would be so much better.
Look, there's some people I think who have an ability to read something like this, and to them it's phenomenal. I'm going to give you an example. The movie 2001. I'd never seen it. I watched it relatively recently. And then I read the Marvel comic book. Because I didn't understand what the hell was going on. And it's one of the, they say it's one of the greatest films ever made. I didn't understand it. Now, that could be because, as my, you know, people would tell me, well, because you're a tight ass, you don't understand.
Well, that is probably, you know, the whole thing is the tight ass thing. But, you know, the movie requires you to just kind of let go and let it take you where it's going to take you. And I guess this story, in theory, would have the same concept, except that is giving you, I don't know, it just gives you so much more in that movie than we get here. But you are right in the comparison that it's, you know, that neither one has a set direction that you could sit and say, okay, now I understand exactly what it is. Even, you know, in 2001, I think it's just more, it's more satisfying because it's just a little bit more imaginative than this is. This just doesn't feel like it has that to me, whereas that movie does. And I don't sit here and say, you know, we recently, or not too long ago, on Is It Yours, we did our top 30 movies of all time in our opinions, and 2001 was not mentioned. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, I argue that it's one of the greatest movies of all time. But it may be visually one of the greatest movies of all time. It may be creatively one of the best movies of all time. But, you know, I factor in entertainment. It's just a strange habit I have. It isn't one of the most entertaining movies of all time. And certainly this isn't one of the most entertaining comic books of all time.
See, I think if the whole the magic and fantasy thing is your bag, this might be more for you.
Right.
I think if you know, Scott's rule of thumb, if they gave you a little bit more of a grounded power set, you know, just give you an explanation as to what his abilities are. You know, and whatever they are, just, you know, you could expand them as much as you want, but just tell us what they are. Don't go from issue to issue and, oh, now he's doing this and now he's doing that. And you know, here's something, you know, 35 issues in that he's never done before. But, oh, he had that power all along. That's what I don't like. And I know Scott doesn't like that either. And if this issue, part of what it should have done was to establish who this character is, what he can do, what he can't do, what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. That should have been the whole focus of this issue and build a story around that. Because you're introducing this character to you know, and it, in theory, your only audience here is kids. So nobody who's reading this book, you know, at least their target audience, has ever seen this character before.
Right.
So, you know, give them something. They really didn't.
To go back to your earlier question about, you know, what was this inconsistent? Something was tickling my brain, so I looked it up. So, you know, I used several different sources when making my notes on the issues that we're covering. So I used like the All-Star Companions. For this one, I was actually using Alter Ego magazine number issue number 93. And there was an acknowledgement in the write-up about this, about what you had noted. And it just said, the first JSA member to be reintroduced in a solo story, which is why we're covering this. The Spectre got the royal treatment from writer Gardner Fox and artist Murphy Anderson, and of course, editor Julie Schwartz. It says, jettisoning the silliness that had descended on the Golden Age strip after Percival Pop the Super Cop joined the cast in More Fun number 74, this trio returned to an earlier format. Spectre and his alter ego, police detective Captain Jim Corrigan, are separate manifestations of the same personality, one physical, one spiritual, each capable of independent action. So, yeah, it's saying here that apparently that had been the way it had been at one point, but I know that, you know, the Spectre that I'm more familiar with is what you were describing, where, you know, Corrigan was basically, you know, a walking corpse. You know, he was a walking dead man and kept alive by, you know, the Spectre being, you know, the primary entity or whatever. So, yeah, it is a little weird and inconsistent. And I don't know when they go, you know, to the other
They go relatively quickly because I think it's by 41 they bring in Percival. That's when I started to check out.
Right.
Percival popped the super cop, who is one of the most annoying characters in comic books you're ever going to meet.
Well, it says here that during when the Spectre was in Adventure Comics, this would have been in the 70s, said Adventure Comics editor Jor Orlando agreed about the Spectre being too good to die. And it says a new Spectre series was launched in number 431, which is the January-February 1974 issue, by the team of writer Michael Fleischer and artist Jim Aparo. It says their dark interpretation of the Spectre as a relentless spirit of vengeance harkened back to the earliest days of the Siegel Bailey series. Jim Corrigan, now a detective, now a captain of detectives with the NYPD, is the Spectre, a walking corpse forced to keep potential love interest Gwen Sterling at arm's length, and then it goes on and on from there. So maybe it was them that kind of put him back into that mode of he was just the, you know, the vessel for the Spectre type of thing. But again, that's what I'm more familiar with this character. Not that I'm terribly familiar with the character at all, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the first issue, he's engaged, I believe. He's going to marry this girl. And then he gets killed and he's got to break it off. But she's repeatedly...
I hate it when that happens.
Talk about coming up with a good excuse. Earthquakes, volcanoes, a flood. I was killed.
I was dead. Yeah, exactly.
There were locusts.
It wasn't my fault.
This is the first Silver Age appearance of the Spectre. Again, that's why we're covering this. You know, he was a JSA member, and he's the first one to be reintroduced in a solo story, which I thought was interesting. His last appearance was actually in More Fun Comics number 101 in 1944, which coincidentally was the same issue that introduced Superboy to the world. Now, it's interesting to note that, you know, so far as I could tell in this entire issue, and, you know, I tried to pay attention and keep, you know, close to the notes and that sort of thing. There was absolutely no mention of Earth 2 in this story, which is where mm-hmm. this adventure has to be taking place at this time. That gets really fuzzy with the Spectre later on, because in his first appearance or two in Brave and the Bold with other characters, I believe the different Earth thing is noted. And then later on, you know, when you get into like the Bob Haney stuff, he just didn't give a shit. So it has like Batman teaming up with the Spectre with no explanation of which Earth is this happening on. How are they getting together? All that sort of thing. It gets really fuzzy. And then the stuff in Adventure Comics never addresses the multiple Earths either. So it's been speculated that maybe there was an Earth 1 Spectre. So it gets a little confusing later on. But at this point, it pretty much has to be Earth 2.
Well, in the Crisis, there's only one Spectre, right?
Right, yep.
I mean, for all we know, if he is powered by God, he can be bouncing back and forth from...
Right, yeah, it might be, you know, for him, it might be, you know, a very simple thing to just, you know, kind of float back and forth. Yeah, absolutely. This issue contains a one-page text feature entitled Origin of the Spectre, which, again, I feel... they should have been doing this all along in the pages of The Flash and Justice League of America as these characters were reintroduced. And I think we mentioned that before as well. Asmodeus, despite what happened to him at the end of this issue, he would return. He would come back in the Spirit Volume 3, which was the Ostrander Mandrake run, which honestly might be my next reading project. Right now I am about 9/10 of the way through a reread of James Robinson's Starman and absolutely loving it. But as soon as I wrap that up, I think I'm finally going to get around to doing reading The Spectre.
I assume that is not really based on having read this issue.
No. No, I want to, I will suffer through the original 10, and I say suffer through, I'm hoping that's not the case, because, I mean, some of those issues are by Neil Adams, so I'm really kind of looking forward to it, at least art-wise. I started reading Volume 2, and it was okay, it wasn't very good, it was just kind of okay, but then it went from Gene Colan on the art, who is pretty damn good, to, I forget I'm at some issue now. I forget what the issue is. It's like issue like 14 or something. Guest drawing Zatanna, and I forget who the artist is, but it's horrible. And when the art turns really horrible, it gets really hard for me to stick with a book. But to be a completist, I'll suffer through it to make my way to volume 3, because that's the one I'm really curious to read, because I love John Ostrander, and I'm a big Tom Mandrake fan too, so I'm looking forward to that. But more than anything, I'm curious, what the hell did they talk about for 60-something issues with this character? I really want to know that, you know? And everybody says it's great, so I'm curious, you know, how did they pull that off, if it really is great, so...
How to buy interdimensional real estate with no money down.
Do we have any other notes?
So just to clarify, if Asmodo, is he saying that for him to be freed, his host needs to be killed by a silver bullet, correct?
Yeah, he says that.
Yeah.
So all he had to do was run into the Lone Ranger. He would have been all right.
Well, plus in now, granted, this, you know, we're not talking about vampires and werewolves here, but isn't silver traditionally an object of good, like it's a weapon of the light side, right? So
right.
How can pure magic, you know, imbued with evil or whatever? That just didn't make a lot of sense to me either.
I don't know if you know this, the Native Americans used to use silver in their arrows to make them fly straighter. I learned that in a documentary.
I did know that. Last note I've got on this is the reprints. So this story has been reprinted. It was reprinted first in Adventure Comics number 491 in 1982. This is the issue where Adventure went from normal comic size to digest-sized format before it bit the dust with, I believe, issue 502, something like that. Showcase presents The Spectre trade paperback 2012 and Spectre the Wrath of the Spectre omnibus hardcover 2020. So in between this issue and the one that Dave's about to synopsize for us, there was another adventure of a JSA-er that I'm just going to mention real quick. I did read it. I just don't feel like we need to go into it. It was Flash number 159. In that story, Barry Allen and Kid Flash go to Earth 2 to seek the help of Dr. Midnight. Despite being written by Gardner Fox, they do not use the theater stage to make the transition to Earth 2. And that was pretty much all I noted on that. It was all right. It wasn't great, and I don't feel like we really needed to go into that whole thing. So it's all you, Dave.
Okie doke. I have for us the sequel to this, Showcase number 61. Cover dated March-April 1966, with an on-sale date of January 25th, 1966. For a whopping 12 cents. Written by Gardner Fox, art by Murphy Anderson, and editor Julia Schwartz. And our issue is entitled Beyond the Sinister Barrier. On a split splash page, the Spectre battles demonic looking creatures as they emerge from a hellscape setting, urged on by what looks like the devil himself, if the devil wears blue briefs and a heavyweight championship belt. We are given this introduction. Billions of years ago, the first primal atom exploded to create the eons and planets. Plants and animals, good and evil. For long eons, evil has existed in the psycho-matter universe of Dis. Dis has awaited, as opposed to Dat and the other thing, Dis has awaited that moment, out of time, when it could break through and dominate the Earth. Assigned to thwart that threat is the Spectre, the only one possessing power enough to keep the force of evil penned up. Where? Where, you may ask? Beyond the sinister barrier. How do you like that?
I didn't ask.
Well, I figured I'd share that with you anyway. Under the blazing sun of the Gobi Desert staggers a shirtless Mongolian bandit. His tongue is swollen and his senses are reeling from thirst. He begs the demon spirits, because that's what I would do as well, of the desert to give him water, and stumbles across a refreshing pool as he gives thanks to the heavenly bird that guides all travelers. He reaches down to quench his thirst, only to realize that it is but a mirage. Suddenly he hears a voice offering to change the sand into water for the mere price of his shadow. When questioned, the voice identifies itself as Shathan, as opposed to Shazam. Shathan, the eternal, master of this, ruler of the psycho-matter worlds. Do you sell me your shadow, yes or no? The bandit replies, why does the master of this need a shadow? No, I'm only kidding. The bandit agrees, and his shadow is gone, and a pool of water appears. As the bandit shouts, I will live, and drinks the water, the voice replies, I too shall live on Earth. With enough human shadows, I shall know life here, as I have known it for eternity, in Dis, land of evil. Some days later in France, a spelunker, André Voisin, finds himself trapped in a cabin as he cries for his life, offering up his very soul to be free. A voice is heard. Your soul is of no use to me, but your shadow is. The deal is agreed upon. And Voisin goes free. In Africa, a big game hunter, Olive Morel, has run out of bullets and is about to be crushed by an enormous elephant, when his shadow is sold for a bullet and her life is saved. In Gateway City, a safety belt snaps and a window washer falls to his death, but another shadow is sold and the viper lands gently on his feet. However, this occurrence has been witnessed by police detective Captain Jim Corrigan. As Corrigan thinks he may have been saved by an updraft, the specter nixes that theory as he noticed the man's shadow vanished as he fell. Sensing an evil aura inside the man, the specter follows and is suddenly gripped by some form of electroplasmic magnetism. Drawn inside the window washer's body, a dark, sinister shadow waits to enfold him. It is the missing shadow, emitting evil energy and building up in frightful fury. Suddenly, there is a psychic detonation, and the specter is hurled out of the physical universe. The specter finds himself in a barren, hell-like place, and under attack but what looks like shorter, yellow versions of the creature from the Black Lagoon, except wearing blue briefs. At first, the specter dismisses the attack, as his body is incorporeal, but he soon finds himself racked with pain. The demons swarm the specter, telling him that in this world of Dis, they are also made of non-matter, just like the specter, and they can destroy him with their weapons. The specter realizes that these fiends are the living incarnation of everything evil known to man, and it is seeking to escape to Earth. But who is behind it? Not bound by ordinary laws, the specter increases his size to that of the very universe. He grows until he becomes so nebulous that the weapons of the demons pass between the spaces of the atoms that make up his body. He concentrates again and wills the floating particles of his substance to regroup back on Earth. As fog rolls in from Gateway Harbor, a foghorn is heard, making intelligible sounds. To the ears of the Spectre, he hears, "You are puzzled, Spectre, shaken by what you have seen and experienced. Know that the forces of evil are on Earth. Not long ago, Asmodeus sought to unleash universal wickedness, but you stopped him. See last issue. Now Shaitan seeks to rip the sinister barrier between Earth and Dis. He has sought to destroy you, for he knows that through you must be fought the coming battle of good and evil. You have the power to eliminate time, to ally yourself to its steady flow. Go back now to the very beginnings of all things, and know from whence this Shaitan springs." The Spectre flows backward through time until he comes to the very first moment in time, 12 billion years ago. Well, wasn't this a problem in a Green Lantern book we covered recently, folks?
Yep.
To the very beginning, 12 billion years ago, when all that exists is the primal atom, immense beyond belief, cosmically gigantic. Then out of the void stabs the creative force, a bolt of supernormal power, which hurls into the colossal atom. It is the instant of creation. Matter explodes, out to fill the void of a now expanding universe. For every action must have an equal and opposite reaction. Another universe is formed by implosion. Another universe. For every good, there is an evil. For the Spectre who is good, there is Shaitan, who is evil. And so in the nether worlds of Dis, Shaitan rules. Shaitan, the gigantic red devil looking creature with the blue briefs and the heavyweight belt. Shaitan is worshipped by his demons. As long as there is a belief in him, he will exist. Shaitan wants to dominate the physical matter universe as well. He wants to use Earth as a stepping stone and has sent evil mental images in the past, such as witches, demons, and the golden calf. But the forces of good were not asleep, and great men rose up to lead the way of goodness, such as Moses, Saint Peter, Buddha, and Muhammad. Recently, Asmodeus was sent, but the Spectre defeated him. Asmodeus set forces in motion, which permitted his master, Shaitan, to break through the barrier and enter Earth. By securing the shadows of willing victims on the verge of death and imprisoning them in the bodies of their former owners, he has created a loyal following of Earth people. The Spectre returns to find Jim Corrigan trying to apprehend a criminal. As the battle takes them into an elevator, the hand of Shaitan literally cuts the cable. As Jim plunges to his death, the Spectre flows out of the car and gently lowers it. The next day, Jim is the target of another attack by Shaitan, this time requiring the Spectre to repair a suspension bridge. In a long-forgotten temple, gather the shadow sellers to worship Shaitan. Their voices are raised in an ancient chorus, a chant that compels the presence of Shaitan. The song that shatters the barrier between Dis and Earth. The Spectre arrives just as Shaitan materializes. As the Spectre attacks, he learns that Shaitan, like the Spectre, is unaffected by material things. However, the Spectre's psycho fist has an impact. The battle is taken into space and into the heart of the sun. The Spectre then takes Shaitan through time, exposing him to the 57 megaton Soviet nuclear blast of 1961. Now, my question is, If you can survive in the heart of the sun, is an atomic blast on Earth really worse than the sun? But whatever. From there, he takes him to the Siberian fireball blast of 1908. I think this is the Tunguska blast spoken of in Ghostbusters.
Yep.
And the Krakatoa volcano eruption of 1883. Not to mention the mass sponge migration. Never mind.
Where does he find the shorts that survive all this is what I want to know.
Please, do you want to see Little Shatan?
Well, no.
Finally, the specter arrives at the moment of creation, hurling Shatan into the primal atom. In the explosion, the essence of Shatan is hurled outward and spread across the vast cosmos and the expanding universe for all infinity. Shatan will never be able to reform unless the plot requires, as he will always be speeding out at more than 100,000 miles per second. With the elimination of Shatan, his worshippers are rejoined with their shadows, and they return to normal. Jim Corrigan and the Spectre will continue to battle for justice. There you go.
Thanks to everybody for listening.
Holy shit.
That's what I said. Holy shit.
I'm glad you had to synopsize all that, not me.
This was painful, my friends.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I can say, try and be positive. I always got a kick out of this cover.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the cover. I do like the cover. The cover is iconic, I think, honestly.
I used to have my screensaver. I had a bunch of comic covers that I thought were really cool saved, and it would just do them as a slideshow. And this was one of the ones I had. And I had never read it, but I just thought it was a cool cover, and it was among the ones that would flash on my screen every once in a while. I don't know. I just got a kick out of that. Again, the artwork in the story is decent. I don't have any issue with that. But the story, it's just, I honestly think I had the same thing that you had with the last issue, Scott, where at some point I just checked out and I was like, I have no idea what's going on anymore. And I don't really have the energy to figure it all out. And I'll wait until I'm on with you guys and you'll tell me what happened, because I just it was like, it was just too far out and too nebulous as to what was going on or why it was going on. It just wasn't doing it for me. And again, I apologize to the listeners, because we're not purposely doing issues that we don't like. It's just, we're trying to be somewhat comprehensive about this. And, sometimes it includes an issue that we're not as crazy about, but I think we're going to try and do better on that. Is that the plan?
So yeah, I'll skip ahead to that a little bit, because this is something that we were going to talk about in a little while. Is that Dave and I were talking about this not long ago after one of our recent recordings, and trying to figure out, okay, just how authoritative do we want to be, and essentially, what do we want to cover? Because I have a master list that's compiled from a lot of different places of basically all of the. It basically comes down to all of the Earth 2, all of the JSA-er appearances pre-crisis, and trying to figure out, okay, which ones do we want to cover, which ones don't we want to cover? Because essentially this whole thing started with wanting to cover the Justice, the JLA JSA team ups, and that's still the core mission of this coverage. But we also, as the characters were reintroduced, the members of the JSA, we wanted to cover that, so we were trying to be authoritative there. But as I think these two issues really demonstrate very well, is that it's easy to just get bogged down in the weeds or just bogged down in something where you just don't have as much enthusiasm for. So how to address that? And I think what we've settled on is that we're going to go with the guide of where this stuff has been reprinted. So one of the guides that we were using was the Crisis on Infinite Earths, the team-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they were reprinting, you know, as these characters had returned in the different team-up books, like, you know, Brave and the Bold with Starman and Black Canary, for example, or with the showcase issues with Hourman and Dr. Fate. These two issues right here with the Spectre were not reprinted in part of that. I'm a little confused, other than, you know, of course, it's not a team-up. I guess that might be the reason why it wasn't. But the other one is, I wonder, is did somebody else kind of feel the same way that we feel about this, is that it just wasn't all that great? I don't know. But we're going to stick much closer to that model, I think. I'm going to continue to read the stories on my own as they pop up. And if something comes along that I feel like, okay, this one really is important, we need to cover this, then we'll kind of break that rule. But as a general rule, we're going to go with that format from now on, because I just don't want to continue to get bogged down in stuff that we're just not feeling quite as much. Because I think nothing kills both our enthusiasm, but also listener enthusiasm to even want to listen to us talk about it, if we just keep covering ones and keep going, we just didn't feel this one. So hopefully this won't happen again for a while. I don't have a lot on this particular issue. It's funny, because my biggest note on this one was going to be that the one thing I really dug about this was how I was feeling that it really jived very well with the origin of the universe and the creation of evil that was related in Justice League number 40. But then Dave pointed out something that I think was a really good observation that I hadn't thought of, is that it does jive, but it also doesn't, because we see the creation of the universe, but we also don't see that big God hand.
Mm-hmm.
And this this does kind of butt up against that story a little bit, because now, granted, the Spectre is only going back to the moment of creation. He's not trying to look beyond that, which I think... maybe I could be retconning here, but I think that was the issue in that Green Lantern story, was that what's his name, Kronos, was trying to look back beyond the moment of creation. Or I could be wrong. I think eventually that becomes the thing. I can't remember in that Green Lantern story if that was the issue at that time, or if it was just simply that he was witnessing creation. It was one or the other.
Right.
It was either that he was witnessing creation, which was forbidden, or he was trying to look back beyond, you know, before creation, to see what existed before. It was one of the two. I don't remember. So it does jive, and it kind of doesn't jive at the same time. I like the acknowledgement, though, that evil was created at the moment that the universe was created. That does jive with the Green Lantern story. So that was kind of neat.
I think you could now prize the hand of God thing, though, because I would now prize it and say that the, what did they call that, that force that sets it off,
right?
The Spectre is a godly being, and he might see it differently than Krona, who was a mortal being,
right?
So maybe, you know, it was just his way of interpreting it.
If I remember properly, I think come the crisis, I think we learn that hand is actually the Spectre's hand, too. So that might have something to do with all this. You know, again, that's a giant retcon, but, you know.
Maybe it's him throwing Shazam into the atom.
See, the problem with this, much more than the last issue for me, is that I see exactly where it's going. And I kind of like some of the things that it's playing with, some of the ideas. I liked the iconography. I like the idea of, again, telling the origin of the universe from a good and evil perspective, how evil has been, you know, led upon the earth over time, and the different images that have been sent, versus the great men that rose up to battle, you know, on the side of good. I like all this stuff that it's telling. It's just, it's, I'm sorry, I hate to say it this way, but it's so fucking boring. That's my problem with it. It's just, it should be really exciting. And I think the visuals are pretty exciting, but the method in which it's laid out is kind of boring. And then Shathan,
you gotta do it like Shazam,
ridiculous. I mean, he looks like a wrestler.
He's Drax. He looks
like Drax. Who is that guy? Andre the Giant?
No, he doesn't look like Andre the Giant.
What's that? No, he doesn't.
No.
I don't know. There's somebody I'm thinking of. Some big fat like wrestler or boxer or something that I think he looks like. But I don't know. He's a big tubby devil with, like, you know, as Dave said, he's got blue briefs and like Elvis's belt. He just looks really silly. I can't take
it. Andre did have a big belly. I'll give him that. But he also had a giant shock of hair at the top that you don't have here.
But, you know, I guess the Spectre runs around in his briefs, too, so.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Shathan's constant, I mean, he has this, like, constant grin on his face to a point where it almost looks like he's kind of locked into that, like it's some sort of, like, rictus grin or something. But instead of looking like sinister or creepy or evil, he just looks like he's having a hell of a great time through the whole issue. He looks like he's just laughing his ass off through the whole, and that takes all of the menace out of him as far as I'm concerned. I'm looking here at the top two panels of page 18. He looks like he's just having a ball. And I'm like, wait, this guy's supposed to be like the devil. I mean, make him scary. Now, he does come back. I looked this up. I haven't read it yet, but he does come back in the, Spectre Volume 3, the Ostrander and Mandrake run. And just judging by the picture that they have of him on the DC Wiki that's taken from that series, he definitely gets a makeover, and he looks damn scary as drawn by Tom Mandrake. So Mandrake definitely looked at this guy and said, yeah, I'm going to do something different. And he looks much more, you know, Satanish and, you know, like a scary, you know, nightmare devil type of thing, not a silly wrestler or whatever the hell they're going for here.
This one could be a member of the Legion of Doom. You know, yeah. They're always laughing, right?
Yeah, he's quite silly. That's that splash page 17, where they're standing around chanting and worshiping him. And I mean, that should be a great, and everything's great about that panel except him. If he looked terrifying, that would be a very effective panel. But he looks just ridiculous. So yeah, it didn't, I don't know, it just didn't quite work for me. And again, with the Spectre having just, there's no definition to him. If he's got this ability to grow to the size of the universe and stomp on his enemies, why the hell would he not use that, like, all the time? And then he's able to, he's like an action figure with his ejecto wrist, you know, or yes. he's got rocket fist, where he just ejects his fist to fly out into space and then come back and hit Shathan in the back of the head.
It's like Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, the glove, the flying, yeah, exactly. It's the flying glove. I don't know. I just, again, I want to like this, and it's just not, I don't know.
This was kind of like the last issue was a little bit of a travelogue of different sites, and this is a travelogue of historical occurrences.
Right.
But they don't try and put it in a story that makes sense. And that's really what it needs. I mean, it needs, like I said, the first issue should have established the Spectre and his powers and his abilities and his weaknesses. And then you come to the villain who's going to be a matchup for him, and you explain why.
Yeah.
There should also be, if you're going to make a character as omnipotent as the Spectre is showing to be, there should have to be a price that's being paid for using this power. And I think then, you know, that adds to the drama then.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem this has at this point, is that it needs grounding. It needs grounding in rules, you know, set some ground rules. This is his abilities. This is what he can do. This is what he can't do. And give him some. I feel like maybe I was projecting a little bit in my synopsis, because there was a point where he talked about being weakened, and then he rejoined with Corrigan. And I said something about, you know, he went back into Corrigan's body for a recharge. But I may have been projecting, because that came later. I don't know if that actually was part of his whole deal at this time, that he actually had to return to Corrigan from time to time to recharge. I know that becomes a thing later on. And I like that, because at least it gives him some sort of weakness. It's a little lame. It's a little like Aquaman can't be out of the water for more than an hour, but at least it's something. It's some form of weakness. At this point, he doesn't seem like he really has a weakness. And again, how boring is that? If he can just do anything, then where's the threat here? Where's the thing to kind of interest you in him? And it's I don't know, it's such a shame, because I really want to love this, especially again with the art. I love the art. I think the world of Murphy Anderson, and I think this is some really spectacular stuff. Coloring's a little funny, but you know, beyond that, I think it's some really fantastic art. But unfortunately, it's pretty bland as a story.
Hey guys, Scott Gardner here. Sorry to break into the episode, but this is the point where our recording failed. We didn't discover this until some time later after the recording, and as you could probably tell from what you've just heard, we weren't all that keen on these books to begin with, so rather than re-record the whole thing and have even less enthusiasm the second time around and probably not capture some of the same comments and everything, we just decided, well, we were pretty much at the end of this. The only thing you're really missing out is the grades. None of us graded these books very high, so we just wanted to kind of wrap the episode up from here. But we do apologize for the snafu with the end of the episode on this. Anyway, for next time, we are very excited to report we will be back with a proper crossover between the Justice League of America and the Justice Society of America, and that will be Justice League of America, issues 46 and 47 from 1966. So please join us for that. We've actually already got that one in the bag, in the can, and it's a really, really good listen. So join us then. Thanks for listening.